Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
Rewind, your week in review for April 10. Despite Governor Tony Evers' last-minute appeals to cancel it, Wisconsin's April 7 election made history. It was a face mask, hand sanitizer, show your ID through plexiglass election if you voted in person, and thousands waited hours to do just that. Another 1.2 million voters, a record, requested absentee ballots. Who won? Sorry, no results until at least Tuesday afternoon. And the week ended with Evers and Republican legislators fighting over how to cut future spending. Another history-making week in Wisconsin. Rewind, your week in review.
I'm Steve Walters. This is Rewind for a historic week, and we've got to start with the dominating news, the election held in the pandemic. So JR and I are just going to talk about some of the major elements in a truly amazing election. So let's just start with that. A record 1.29 million voters asked for absentee ballots. 77% were returned by Tuesday night. Now, JR, you've got an update. What's the latest total?
We are closing in on 1.1 million that have been mailed back. Because of federal court action, which began last week with the U.S. Judge William Conley ordering a delay or late delay the deadline to return ballots till Monday.
Yeah.
And then the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals over the weekend said that's good. But then the Supreme Court, the United States, on Monday said, yeah, that deadline is good, but you have to have them postmarked by Tuesday.
Right.
So we're still having ones trickle in. But we are already at three counties, Milwaukee, Dane, and Kenosha, that have more absentee ballots returned alone than they cast ballots in the Supreme Court race a year ago. So it's just been an incredible phenomenon. The other thing is about this dynamic, typically, I mean, I went back and looked, trying to figure out like what's a decent return rate for these ballots, right?
Yeah.
The hard thing is that we're conducting most of this election via mail this year. Go back to 2016, I think mailed absentee ballots were like less than 6% of the votes cast overall.
Right, right.
All said and done, we're going to be what, north of 80% of the ballots cast via mail in this election?
80%? You think it'll be that high? Okay. All right. All right.
And that said, the return rate in fall of 2016 was like 91.7% of absentee ballots that were mailed.
Right.
Are we going to hit that mark? It's all said and done with this. I don't know. And oh, by the way, will they all be counted? Because don't forget, we had a couple of quirks with these absentee ballots, right? Just off the top of my head, you've got one where people who mailed in a ballot between Conley's decision on Thursday of last week and the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals' decision on Friday, who did not include a signature from a witness on their ballot, an affirmation of why they feel safe doing that, those ballots won't count. What's more, they can't fix those ballots. We call them spoiled ballots in Wisconsin elections. Often you are allowed to go back and fix them. In this case, they can't. It's really a weird quirk in state law. Also now, the Elections Commission is talking about ballots that weren't postmarked, but likely sent on time, another quirk going on. There are all kinds of issues in this election that cause all kinds of lawyers make big bucks, I think, if they go to court about this stuff.
Yeah, it might be a full employment for lawyers election. Let's look at some other highlights from that election. It was an election dominated by hand sanitizer, thermometers. To vote in Racine, you had to have your temperature checked. Plexiglass barriers greeted voters. 2,000 National Guard troops were tentatively delegated to work as poll workers. 500 of them, an additional 500, were held in reserve. Milwaukee cut the number of polling places from 180 to 5, and Green Bay cut the number from 30 to 2. Voters in Milwaukee and Green Bay, and I'm sure other places, waited hours. And finally, I'm going to call this the winners next week election because a judge says no results can be released until 4 p.m. Tuesday. Any other anecdotes that sticks out for you, JR, from last week's election?
Well, a couple of things. One, you know, look at Madison, where they went down from 92 polling places to 66.
66.
There were nine lines in Madison to vote on Tuesday.
Right.
You went from 180 down to 5. They had the long lines. Green Bay, 30 to 2. They had the long lines. Now, those decisions were made because those communities were afraid of what was going to happen in terms of the number of poll workers they could get. But with the Guard's help, they could have opened more polling sites. And there's one failure in this election at the local level that creates long lines. But there are multiple mistakes that were made or questionable decisions. Let's start from the top. If the governor had asked or suggested change election date, let's say 2 weeks ago, it would have been a much different discussion than what we had, where he moved on Monday in a kind of an ever-moving evolution for Evers, where at first he said we could have the election safely, but go vote absentee. Then it was, let's do an all-mail election. Then it was, we should change the date. Then it was executive order. This conversation, change the date, had begun a couple weeks ago. It could have been a totally different one. You had Republican lawmakers who were dug in because they saw, one, they believe that state law should have been carried out as is. Two, like Evers said weeks ago, there were thousands of offices on the ballot that were maybe would have been left unfilled. And third, let's be honest, Republicans saw an opportunity that if you had a lower turnout election, it likely helped Daniel Kelly in a Supreme Court race. So you've got all kinds of things happening, not to mention the courts, with what happened with those guys.
And that's the way I want to break it down, JR. 2 weeks ago, you and I did a day-by-day responses of state government to the healthcare emergency. This week, I want to do there are three branches of state government. So I want to break that down as you were just getting into. Let's go a little deeper. The response of the executive branch. First, as you said, for weeks, Governor Evers has said democracy must go forward and state and local elected positions must be filled. Then, 1:15 last Friday, and we referred to this in last week's Rewind, he called a special session, asked that it convene 27 hours later, 4 p.m. Saturday, to delay the election. Then I looked it up. At about noon on Monday, the governor issued an emergency order for vote by mail, a May election, citing the COVID-19 health risk to in-person voting. And I want to go back to what he said on Friday. So the quote is, here's the bottom line, folks. If as elected officials, we're going to expect the people of our state to make sacrifices to keep all of us safe, then by golly, we better be willing to do our part too. Now, just two other things before I give you a chance to talk about the executive branch. The Department of Health Services, to its credit, is giving us almost daily updates on the number of those tested and infected. And what they just said was, let me check my notes from the last hearing. We're up to 33,225 negatives, 3,068 positives, 128 deaths. So, and also, JR, before I give you, hang on, they just announced that the executive branch, the Evers administration, just announced 215,000 more food share households will get additional benefits April 12th and 26th. Okay, sorry, JR, give me your thoughts on the executive branch.
Well, in talking to people all week from both sides of the aisle, there are people who noted that Evers' change in position about calling for the change in date came after a national media story that really knocked him for not moving, trying to move the date earlier. Now, look, so the, you know, give the governor credit, benefit of the doubt a little bit here. This has been a rapidly evolving situation. Like, we are not, what we know right now is not what we knew a month ago, right? So things have changed quite a bit on the ground, the rapid uptick in the number of cases, the national situation that we're in. So it has been a challenge to respond to this. That said, if the governor had been pushing for a change in date, let's say 2 or 3 weeks ago, different conversation. Now, I'm not suggesting the Republicans go along with it, but it would have been a cleaner message from the governor, people tell me, if he made that argument a couple weeks ago versus a week ago.
Okay, and now let's look at the response by the legislative branch. First of all, as you alluded to, GOP leaders said Governor Evers never brought up the idea of postponing elections until last Friday at about 1:15. GOP legislators didn't convene the 4 p.m. Saturday special session that the governor wanted. GOP legislators and party officials sued to block the governor's executive order Monday, the emergency order that would have canceled in-person voting and moved the election. GOP legislators then set the governor a list of priorities for the $2 billion in federal emergency aid and asked Evers to allow churches and synagogues to celebrate Passover and Easter. Now, just a little bit more on that. The governor did say, clarify it, that you could synagogues, churches, other religious groups could meet in groups of 10 or they could hold outdoor services. Just a couple quotes from the two GOP leaders. As they evolve through this week of dialogue, Hundreds of thousands of workers are going to their jobs every day, serving in essential roles in our society. And this is an interesting comment. An election is just as important as getting takeout food. Finally, one more sentence. Our republic must continue to function, and many local government positions on the must be filled, on the ballot must be filled. Now, they just announced an extraordinary session. We will get into that later, but give me a response of the Assembly and Senate.
Well, look, a couple of things. One, let's look at nationally. Republicans have been much more skeptical of the response of COVID-19 than Democrats, generally speaking, in terms of, you know, stay-at-home orders, closing on such business, those kinds of things. So there is already this kind of pushback from Republicans. There are some theories, obviously, that because they're taking cues from the president, who until recently was much more skeptical than others about this pandemic. There's that. Also, you know, Republicans, generally speaking, legislature, don't represent Milwaukee, Milwaukee County. They don't represent Dink. They don't represent the hot spots of this pandemic. So they're not seeing the same impact in their districts, the same threats to people going out public as you are seeing in these hot spots. Look, one of the images that we're going to last from this election, Robin Moss working a polling site, wearing personal protection equipment, saying it's safe to go outside. Now, look, he was knocked for wearing that stuff and saying it's safe, but he was required to apparently for working at the polling site. But that's that thing where people feel like Republicans locked into this because they believe the law should have been followed as it's written, not any allowances. Two, it helps Kelly. And third, that they just aren't seeing the same impact at home as Democrats are in some of these urban districts.
Well, JR, just remember that Speaker Voss put out a statement saying everyone who worked at that polling place wore the same plastic shield and gown. I just want to put that.
Again, that's required to do that, but that's those images that are kind of living on from his election of him and that equipment saying it's safe to be outside.
Okay, JR, when we talk about the legislative reaction, we would be remiss if we didn't point to two press releases today. One from Senator Noss, Stephen Noss, Republican, citing his term, not mine, growing revolt to how COVID-19 response has been handled in Wisconsin. Point one, Republican Senator Dewey Strobel, we need a fresh look at the policy choices. Yes, he said, every death is tragic, and I think we're up to 68. I may have that wrong. If so, I apologize. Senator Strobel said, yes, every death is tragic, but businesses and livelihoods are being ruined by shelter-in-place order. That is eroding, Senator Strobel said, our civil liberties and quality of life. Some Republican senators growing restless, JR, right?
Absolutely. And they're not alone. I mean, there is a piece of the Republican base that wants to reopen, in their words, the country as soon as possible. Again, go back to the president, the signals that he's been sending, the coverage by Fox News of the early days of the COVID-19. There is just a healthier skepticism of what's out there and what we should be doing in Republican circles. Now, the danger for people who are pushing these stay-at-home orders and other things is that if you're successful, it looks like overkill because we don't hit the numbers you warned about. We don't get the number of deaths or cases because it worked. So how do you prove that this was necessary when they don't see the numbers that you use to justify it? That is a challenge for the U.S. administration, health officials in general, and it's just an issue going forward for them.
Okay, and I want to apologize. I want to get it right. The new number announced by Secretary Palm is 128 deaths statewide in Wisconsin, not the 64. I was wrong about that. Okay, now, if we're tracing the responses of all three branches of government, time to look at the judiciary. As I said, Governor Evers, about noon on Monday, issued an executive order trying to move that election. You and I, JR, and every journalist in the state, watch for the Supreme Court reaction. Four Supreme Court justices, four of the seven, Chief Justice Rogenczak, Ziegler, Hagedorn, and Grassl Bradley said, Governor, you exceeded your authority. And I'll read from that opinion in a minute. The dissent came from Justice Ann Walsh Bradley and Rebecca Dallet, Daniel Kelly, who was on the ballot. And we should learn next week whether he was reelected or defeated by Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky, abstained. JR, before I give you a chance, let's just summarize the majority opinion in that case. The question is whether the governor has the authority to suspend or rewrite state election laws, although we recognize the extreme seriousness of the pandemic that the state is currently facing. We conclude that he does not. Then from Justice Ann Wallace Bradley's dissent, the majority gives Wisconsinites an untenable choice. Endanger your safety and potentially your life by voting, or give up your right to vote by heeding the recent and urgent warnings about the fast-growing pandemic. It's another example of the court's unmitigated support of efforts to disenfranchise voters, a strong dissent. Then, P.S., the U.S. Supreme Court said that absentee ballots had to be in or postmarked by April 7th, and they could be counted up through 4 p.m. on next Tuesday. I'm sorry, J.R., your turn.
Let's go. State Supreme Court first. There was zero surprise in that decision when it came out on Monday. All four conservatives participating voted to overturn the order. Both liberals voted to sustain it. Look, we saw this coming a mile away. Justice Rebecca Bradley has been tweeting a series of historical quotes from figures about liberties in times of urgencies. She, people tell me, have been itching for a chance the judiciary to weigh in on the governor's orders, because you could tell she feels they've gone too far. With the U.S. Supreme Court, what's really interesting to me is looking at that order is that, one, the court overturned the lower court ruling that extended the deadline to April 13th to receive the ballot.
Yes.
But the court said it must be postmarked by Tuesday. Now, Steve, this is why it's easy to be a cynic in this business. There is no provision in state or federal law or the state or U.S. Constitution that allows ballots postmarked by the election day and received 6 days later to be counted. They basically embraced something created by a lower court judge, which is knocked by conservatives as activism, to say, okay, it's okay to allow it, in this example, to receive the ballot 6 days later, but not to have it put out in the mail in, if it's after 8 p.m. election day. What's okay. More, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, JR. Excuse me.
The majority decision, which has been knocked by liberals because it said there was no request from the plaintiffs for that relief of being allowed to submit the ballots after election day. Well, it was during the oral presentation that they requested this. This was this back and forth among legal scholars, you know, lawyers and those kinds of folks about whether it was really asked for or not. But that was part of the crux of the majority of opinion was, we don't like changing election rules so close to election date. It was not right for this judge to step in a week out, less than a week out essentially, and changing the rules. It wasn't requested for formally in the briefs beforehand. And we're skeptical of some of these things in this ruling anyway. Liberals, led by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, says this is only disenfranchisement because how do you cast a ballot if you haven't received it? Because lots of ballots were not received before Tuesday to be put back in the mail. The majority basically said, hey, look, this is no different than a normal election where you ask for a ballot late. If you ask for it late, this is what happens. It does not address those people, again, that I brought up earlier, who followed Conley's ruling in submitting their ballot without a signature, a witness signature, through no fault of their own, following that ruling, are not getting their ballots counted now because of the way this all came down.
Okay, but what about the bins of absentee ballots from Oshkosh and area voters that were found in the possession of the U.S. Postal Service? Now you have both our U.S. senators, State Senator Fian and Assembly Democratic Leader Hintz, wanting an investigation of that. But I'm sorry, that's just a P.S.
Oh, that's more than a P.S. Those are three
bins. It's a big deal. It's a big deal if you're disenfranchised.
And again, it goes back to what I said before, the feedback I got of the systematic failures at multiple levels when it comes to this election, how it was run. Now, we try to run an election in the middle of a pandemic. We showed the hiccups you're going to have if you try to do something like that. It is a big problem. The question is, how will it be fixed, or will it be fixed? What I was told by one attorney this week was, wait and see what the results are on Monday, which we won't know until after 4 o'clock on Monday. Okay. If the Supreme Court race is close enough that these questionable ballots would have made a difference, expect legal action. If it's a big gap, okay, you're not going to change the outcome. Maybe do it for an exercise to prove a standard for going forward. But if we're a dead tight race for Supreme Court, there'll be a lot of fights about these ballots going forward.
Okay, now let's throw it forward. We alluded earlier to the formal statement by the two GOP leaders that they're calling an extraordinary session. The Assembly is tentatively plans to be in next week in a historic virtual session, but they're in this discussion, I won't say fight, they're in this evolving negotiation with the governor. So the issue is, who cuts state spending? First of all, a final package that the Assembly may vote on next Tuesday, which you and I haven't seen, and the governor at his briefing today said he has not seen, said, well, We have heard that it's going to include GOP leaders wanting the GOP-controlled Joint Finance Committee to be able to cut future general fund spending on schools, healthcare, UW system, et cetera, the billions of dollars, and repeal the 2% pay raise scheduled to go into effect, and that's probably going to be in that package. And this plan anticipates a need to cut general fund spending because we're not going to hit the revenue collections that were projected last January. Revenue Secretary Barker told me that yesterday in an interview. But this proposal would be part of probably a huge COVID-19 response bill that would spend federal aid, that would relax licensure rules for healthcare workers and repeal the one-week waiting period to get unemployment benefits. Governor Evers said that he could potentially, he hasn't seen the bill. He said that today. He's waiting on it. But here's his quote. "I'm asking for the legislature to take politics out of this proposal so we can move forward on addressing the needs of our state." The response quickly from Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, suggesting he'll veto the full bill publicly while privately we're still negotiating, is irresponsible. We'll keep working with a minority party to put together a bill that can hopefully pass soon, maybe even as early as next week. What are your thoughts, JR, on how close they might come or not come to having a bipartisan package?
Discussions were ongoing today. Assembly Leader Jim Steinke of Kirkcona said that provision on joint finance has been dropped from the proposal. He said it was an early idea that was kicked around Democrats and now it's been pulled out. That idea was basically based off the notion that we're going to have a big financial problem. It was all that if the Fiscal Bureau predicted a deficit, these powers would kick in to go ahead and cut spending quickly. But that would be a tough pill for any governor to swallow, to give that kind of authority to a 16-member committee controlled 12 to 4 by Republicans. Now, the question going forward are things like that package must include new flexibilities for eligibility for Medicaid, for example, to qualify for new federal dollars.
Yeah.
They've already said it's going to include a change the one-week waiting period for unemployment benefits. Right now, if you file for unemployment, it's 1 week between when you file for get your first check or qualify for it. That would go away, at least temporarily. The governor wants it to be eliminated. Republicans who put it in place 9 years ago want to suspend it to the end of this year. So watch how that plays out. But there are fast-moving pieces here to make sure we qualify for additional federal money. I get the impression that Cox will keep going over the weekend. We should probably see something on Monday if we go to the floor, probably on Tuesday in the Assembly.
Okay, but it's going to be a long, comprehensive bill. It'll take a long time to analyze it, and the Democrats are going to have a chance to respond to it. So that and the results of the election will dominate next week. JR, let's talk about one other thing that is non-health emergency and special session related. Foxconn had to submit by April 1 a report of investments, job created at that huge Mount Pleasant complex for 2019. They needed to create 520 jobs to qualify for state tax credits that former Governor Walker and GOP legislators approved 3 years ago. The state tax breaks depend on two things: number of jobs created and the investment in that huge complex going up in Racine County. The Foxconn official, Mr. Lee, said Foxconn directly employed 600 individuals with more than 550 meeting the criteria for qualifications as full-time employees. Melissa Hughes, Missy Hughes, the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, said, well, we need some time to look at this. Her statement, an independent third-party auditor is what is required to review the April 1 report submitted by Foxconn. WEDIC expects to receive the auditor's report by May 16th. Conversations with Foxconn about aligning the contract with the project continue. Parse Missy Hughes's nice response, generic response for me, JR.
A year ago, Foxconn also thought it put out a number of jobs created. The audit found it was short, the number that Foxconn said were created. There's that issue. So yes, Foxconn says it's created enough jobs to qualify, but wait for that audit to be sure. And oh, by the way, there's a bigger issue with this project, and that is that the Evers administration insists it is no longer the scope of what it was originally intended to be. And yes, because of that, it falls short of the contract period. So what I'm watching is, what's the Evers administration reaction? And doesn't say it qualifies for any job credits because of what's going on out there with the Generation 6.5 plant versus Generation 10, basically creating smaller screens, originally envisioned. That's the thing to watch. The impression is that there's a big fight going on between the Evers folks and the company. How's that going to play out? It doesn't go to court.
And any tax breaks not given Foxconn makes more money available to deal with some of these COVID-related emergency costs for local governments, healthcare, things like that. Okay, JR, here are 40 places that you and the boys cannot go this weekend because the governor has shut down 40 state parks and recreation areas. That order came out yesterday. You and I know how it's being widely debated on social media. When you look at it deeply, when you go in depth, the order closes, as I said, 40 parks and recreation areas. Some of the most popular, High Cliff, 16,000 visitors last weekend. Kohler Andre Park, 8,400. Lapham Peak, Waukesha County, 11,000. Devil's Lake, beautiful. You and I love it. 7,647. Record attendance at people who were not practicing social distancing. And the governor's statement, let's read it quickly. Unfortunately, growing difficulty with ensuring social distancing compliance, dwindling cleaning supplies, and mounting trash are some of the challenges. We have to address the growing public health and safety concerns and protect Wisconsinites. JR, it's getting warmer. I took a 2-mile walk today. We and our families want to get outside. This is a big deal, at least as we cope with safer at home.
Now, remember, a month ago, the governor's talking about cutting fees to enter state parks because he wanted you to still get outside, your mental health, go for a walk, go for a bike ride. Yes, staying at home, but doesn't mean you have to be sheltered in place. You can go out and do some stuff. Just be smart, keep distance from people.
And
keep your distance. Things are going to be taken away because they're trying to keep that minimum contact thing. We're not unique in Illinois. They closed parks in Chicago because the same thing going on. People flocking out to enjoy the nice weather, but then they're right on top of each other. Even in an outdoor area, it's not great for what's happening.
And responding to the governor's order, Dane County Executive Joe Parisi said, "We're for now going to keep our county parks open, but if we see a crush, we reserve the right to close it for some of these same reasons."
Steve Noss in an email chain with governor's aides, basically yes, saying that there's a revolt, to use his words.
Growing revolt.
Because of what's going on, this is ridiculous, et cetera, et cetera. So again, the chafing of Republicans to some of these measures, and what are they going to do when this authority of the governor's expires in early May, I think it is, what's the response going to be? What would they extend? It's a huge issue because, yes, the curve has been flattening, it sounds like, but the fear is that you flatten it, but then you don't follow through, and then it goes right back up. Looks like Republicans say, look, we need a certain date to target to open businesses because we can't just flip the switch. You call it on a Tuesday. We can't walk in Wednesday and flip the switch, be back in business. We have to restock supplies, get back to our supply chains, bring back employees. There are things that have to be done. We need a date to start things. The question is, what is that date?
Okay. And the governor, two or three times in today's briefing, says he's going to let science make the call. JR, we got about a minute left. Two things are going to dominate next week's rewind. First of all, action by one or potential both houses of the legislature. But real quickly, JR, a prediction. When do you think we'll know the winners of the election? Midnight Tuesday, 6 a.m. on Wednesday, or later in the week? Well, I'm not asking you to predict winners. When?
I'm treating 4 o'clock Monday like 8 o'clock on a normal election day. So we're thinking up 4 hours. So if it's a close race, it could take a while. Don't forget, Neubauer Hagedorn last year for Supreme Court, it took a couple days for her to concede because there's a 6,000 vote margin. What I don't know is we're seeing all these numbers come in of absentee ballots and where places are surging like Milwaukee. What's hard to know is it normal proportions of Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or are we seeing surge in part because of a Democratic presidential primary? So yeah, Waukesha County right now as of this morning, right at what it was absentee ballots alone, the Supreme Court race last year. But are those Democrats who are turning out because of the primary? I don't know. So it's hard to kind of read the tea leaves of, okay, turnout is X in this community. That means Y for this race. It's very difficult to read right now.
Well, yeah, I got more to say, but we're out of time. So I'll just say I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for April 10.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.